He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitzjulian, Council Producer Extraordinaire, Melody Intern of the Day, and getting an award for it. This is Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game. 615-737-1025 gets you in touch to hang out with us. 615-737-1025. You can also actively get to us on the Twitters at Jason Fitz, at Braden Gall. And you guys know the drill. It happens every single Wednesday at 9 a.m. No need to explain it anymore. It's time for Midweek Mock.
It's time for the Braden and Fitz Midweek Mock. Follow us on Twitter at 1025 The Game to vote for the draft you like best.
So now, what time it is?
Now, Braden and Fitz are on the clock.
You know the rules. It's a snake draft. We drew the order. 1, 2, 3, 4, 4, 3, 2, 1, 1, 2, 3, 4, 4, 3, 2, 1. We drew the order during the break. Julian goes first. Melody goes second. I go third. Braden goes fourth. We might as well just make that the permanent order. It feels like that's it.
Don't like that idea.
Every single week. This week, we've gone back and forth on themes. This week's theme for the Midweek Mock, non-alcoholic beverages. Mm. Non-alcoholic beverages. And like all Midweek Mocks, we'll go as specific as you want to go on it, right, guys? So, and remember the main rule, no pandering. Don't pick what the audience wants. Pick what you want and let the audience decide who the winner will be.
I'm just going to call it a BevMock.
Oh, BevMock. I love that, BevMock. Julian, haven't you won two straight, I believe?
Yeah, I have.
Julian is on a winning streak.
You're way off brand, dude.
BevMock. So, Julian, first up, of the non-alcoholic drinks.
Non-alcoholic BevMock.
And to use this as an example, guys, for anyone that's not sure what we mean when we say specificity, you don't just pick. You pick Sprite, and then you get Sprite and Diet Sprite, right, in that instance? But you don't get, like, if you pick Coke. You don't get Coke, Cherry Coke, Diet Coke, right. Coke Lime. Right. You don't get all this stuff.
I think if you take Coke, you get Coke and Diet Coke, and that's
it. I'm going to take whatever I want, and I'm going to take lemonade number one overall.
Lemonade
and
goes
I don't mean
first.
Beyonce.
Pretty strong roll.
First off the board, Julian takes lemonade. That takes us to Melody.
Coffee.
Oh,
also a strong roll.
That was not even nice. That was a mean move.
Diet Coke Zero for you, right?
Well, I had coffee and iced coffee as my number one, but you just stole those from me, you mean person. Okay, then I will go with my first one will be Dr. Pepper.
Okay, so I will take a spinoff of both lemonade and coffee. I will take an Arnold Palmer. So give me sweet tea and lemonade mixed together. So that's my first pick is Arnold Palmer. Sweet tea and lemonade, one of the greatest inventions in the history of the mankind. Thank you, Arnie. And I'm going to go with, I've got to get some sort of coffee in here because I have to have some caffeine. I will take a latte. So all of the lattes. That's my coffee drink of choice. Give me Arnold Palmer and latte.
All right, that's good. At this point, I will then go to the family, the Red Bulls. I'm going to the Red Bull.
Of course you are.
Red Bull has like...
You're going to have diabetes at the end of this mock.
Well, I mean, it would all be sugar-free for me, but I don't have to say that because I get the sugar-free Red Bull with the Red Bull. So that brings us back to Melody.
Strawberry smoothies.
Oh,
a smoothie.
I did not think it was a smoothie. Well, I mean, yeah, you drink it.
Okay, you can drink a lot of things.
I don't have a problem with the smoothie. It
seems, I'm good.
Sounds like a drink, right?
I'm good, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I will now choose Fanta.
Don't you wanna?
Wow. So far, Julian Council with lemonade and Fanta. Melody has coffee and strawberry smoothies. I have Dr. Pepper and Red Bull, which, by the way, for the record, would actually be Diet Dr. Pepper and Diet Red Bull. And you have Arnold Palmer's and lattes. So that brings us to round three. Julian, you're back on the clock.
Shirley Temple.
Nice.
Oh, well done.
Which is, what, grenadine and Sprite, essentially, right? Okay.
I know I loved them as a kid.
Yeah, they were good.
I loved them as a kid.
They are still good.
Takes us to Melody. Okay.
Orange juice.
Oh, she went OJ. I didn't even think of juices.
Strong
juices
roll.
Juices belong in this.
There's a lot of juices you could go with, which is tricky.
I waited here.
Grapefruit juice. Tremendously underrated, by the way.
Oh, maybe if you put sugar in it. This would have been my first overall pick, but I knew I could value it later because I have been known to brew much of this on my own. In the third round, I take root beer. So there you go.
All three carbonated still, which is so bad for you.
Oh, my gosh.
Now it's to me?
Yes.
Oh, man. Okay. This is a tough one. Now, if I get, if I just take milk, do I get chocolate milk, milkshakes, and hot chocolate?
No. No.
All?
No, but you get milk.
Because you make milk, milk makes all, of those.
But you get all of the milk. You get like skim milk, 2% milk, the whole milk, you get all those.
So if I want chocolate milk, I have to say chocolate milk.
Yeah, chocolate milk is its own thing.
Chocolate milk.
Okay.
With one pick.
Which brings you to?
My last pick. I'm going to go, I could go super boring with water.
Yeah, I love that none of us have picked water.
I might take water here just so I can stay alive.
It's no one's favorite, though.
As we enter this, by the way, you so far have Arnold Palmer latte chocolate milk.
Damn right. I'm going to go with, I'm going to go with green tea, and I'm going to take, I get the hot green tea and the cold green tea, right? Like I can get all of the green teas.
You get all the green teas.
I don't think anyone else wants green tea.
Yeah,
dude, have you ever had green tea?
Yeah, it's not good.
It's good for everything.
Mm-hmm. Which actually makes me think there's a tea I drink all the time that I really like, but nope. I am. Ooh, this is a tough one because there's no need for a mixer here. But you know what? I haven't taken it off the board yet. So is my question to the panel is. Is Coke, would Coke Zero be part of the Coke family?
Yeah, we'll give it to you. We'll give it to you.
Okay.
If you want, you take Coca-Cola, you get that, we'll give you Coke Zero.
So you want Coke Zero?
I want Coke Zero, okay. Yeah.
You have four beverages that will literally cut time off your life.
Four beverages that I drink all the time, and I'm a beacon of
light.
Diet
of a five-year-old.
I'm the beacon of light in the health department, so there you go.
Something.
There we go. So we're back to Melody.
I'm going to follow suit. I'm going Sundrop.
Oh, Sundrop is good.
It's my cheat drink.
I really wanted milkshake.
Well, it does bring all the girls to the yard. And Julian Council.
Cheerwine Float.
Yes, Cheerwine, which is basically Cherry Coke, right? Like it tastes the same.
No.
But it's a better version of Cherry Coke, right?
It's
Cheerwine Float.
Yeah, it's much.
Oh.
So
you're getting like the vanilla ice cream and everything. Okay.
So Julian Council went lemonade, Fanta, Shirley Temple, and Cheerwine Float.
He's also 11 years old.
I mean, that is spectacular. Next up, Melody went coffee, orange juice, strawberry smoothie, Sundrop. So you've got a little
strong
bit
roll there. Strong roll
there's
there.
There's a little bit of a variety there. I went with, obviously, all the Diet Dr. Pepper, Diet Red Bull, Diet Root Beer, and Coke Zero. So I am filling my body with all the chemicals. And Braden went with the Arnold Palmer, then the latte, chocolate milk, green tea. So that is our
Have you never had like the Arizona green tea? Like it's
oh yeah, I hate green tea.
It's full of sugar, it's delicious.
Yeah, no.
It's the only thing it's the best thing to drink when you're sick, too. You got a cold, drink some green tea.
No one took sweet tea.
Well, I took the Arnold Palmer cuz I wanted lemonade and sweet tea.
Right.
So I comboed that.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing, I'm not a big sweet tea guy.
Also makes you a terrorist.
I prefer my tea to be unsweetened and then I'll just put some Splenda in if I need a little bit of audit.
You know that sugar doesn't dissolve in cold liquid, right?
Right. That's totally fine with that, which is good because then you get the little granules of it when you're drinking the
drink. Of course,
yeah. It's tasty. Yep. So Julian will put it up on 102.5 The Game. You guys will erupt. And again, Julian is on fire, by the way. Julian's on fire with two straight wins. Johnny's already come in and given you, Braden, the solid pick of the Arnold Palmer, which
Casey with a K says green tea is the only good tea. That may be true. I don't like a lot of tea.
Man, there's a specific herbal.
So that's
whatever.
An indictment on both of you then.
There's a specific herbal tea called Throat Coat that they make for singers and everything. I love that tea. I love the way it tastes. Like I drink that tea.
Green
all the
tea
time.
Green tea is one of those like superfoods. Like avocado. Green tea is to drinks as avocado is to food.
Well, you can vote at 1025 The Game is the Twitter account, at 1025 The Game. It'll be out there for each of you guys to vote on it. Let us know what we missed at Braden Gall, at Jason Fitz. We'll see. Casey is angry that there was no Mr. Pibb. That's because I took Dr. Pepper,
Whoa.
Casey, the real
language,
version of
Casey
it.
Language, Casey with a K. Language.
I took the real version of it, Dr. Pepper, okay? Mr. Pibb is a drink of disappointment. You walk into the restaurant and you say, do you guys have Dr. Pepper? And they say Mr. Pibb, and you're like, okay.
Tastes the same.
Yeah. So there you go. And randomly, while I took Coke Zero, I actually prefer Diet Pepsi to Diet Coke. There you go. There's your random diet beverage review of the day. Julian will put the vote out there.
I'm
you guys can chime
health,
in. You guys can chime in. Tell us what you think. When we come back, we look like a couple of idiots. There are a couple of fan bases in the SEC that now look like some idiots. We'll tell you why, and we'll tell you how we can fix the world. We'll do it next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall, and I'm Jason Fitz. This is Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game. 615-737-1025 gets you to us. 615-737-1025. Also, at Jason Fitz, at Braden Gall. Michael Jennings on Twitter says, ooh, I'm Braden. I'm so responsible. It drinks boring. Loosen up. Jason Fitz with the win.
What do you mean? What's boring about an Arnold Palmer?
Well, Arnold Palmer latte, chocolate milk, and green tea.
Chocolate milk? What's boring about chocolate milk?
Green tea,
I'll acknowledge green tea, totally boring, and clearly me not pandering.
I mean, it's a little bit, there's a little bit old man there. Like the old guy that's
old
like,
man,
I'm
going
to get
being an adult.
I'm going to get something fun and get myself a chocolate milk.
How is chocolate milk?
So drinking green tea makes you an adult. Okay,
chocolate milk is.
Write that down.
Chocolate milk is like, eight-year-olds.
No. 8-year-olds and like 75-year-olds all splurge on chocolate milk.
Dude, chocolate milk is not boring.
Chocolate milk is like naps. Like when you're really little.
What's
and when
wrong?
You're really
you take
old,
naps. You
when
love naps.
When you're really little and you're really old. I'm old.
Likes naps. We all like naps. What's wrong with a nap?
I require naps.
So you know who needs to take a nap? All the idiots on social media that tweet during college football games. Like, this is that I just wish that Twitter would put a lock on your account and not let you tweet during your favorite football team's games just to hold off a little bit, because the amount of trash talking that happens early in a game and then spins itself around. I mean, Texas A&M is the perfect example of that. I mean, there was a point where I think they were building statues in the first half and they were rioting in the second half. And it's just a reminder that you can win by just not saying anything. Maybe it's the beat down like Raiders fan in me that sits there and says, hey, you don't sing. You don't trot out to any victory until the fat lady has sung at the end of the opera, right?
How many contract extensions were given to Kevin Sumlin in the first half? How many people fired Jim Mora in the first half? But here's my big issue with Texas A&M. The booster, the board, a member of the Board of Regents, who is, because he's extremely wealthy and loves Texas A&M football, he gets to have a say in the future of the team, which is one of the coolest things about college football, in that the fans actually have some control over these situations. It's also one of the worst things in college football, that boosters can come together, and because a bunch of fans don't think that you're the right coach anymore, they can get you fired. Tony Busby, I think was his name, and not the former basketball coach. But this guy goes on Facebook and posts a long rant about how important he is. I am so important to the Texas A&M program. I stood by Kevin Sumlin after this. I stood by Kevin Sumlin after that. Now I have Kevin Sumlin's career in my hands. What kind of an idiot are you? You're going on Facebook and you're posting about how important you are. This is about Texas A&M football. This isn't about you and your role. Just like the guy on Twitter who screams bloody murder in the first and second quarter about how this is the end of the Big Ten, or this is the end of Butch Jones, or this is the end of Jim Mora at UCLA. You got to let the game play out. There was a lot of good to be taken from that Texas A&M game, which I know sounds very strange, but they ran the ball like crazy and controlled the offensive line and looked awesome in the first half. If Kevin Sumlin gets fired, I will acknowledge that, I think we talked about this, you know, if you're 8-5 and you beat a couple of bad teams, you know, and that loss is going to be the one that stands out. Like, it's how you got to that 8-5, and that loss is bad. But this booster, it's just such a bad look. It makes you look so self-important and self-aggrandizing. Like, it's
why?
Just ridiculous.
I totally disagree. Why? Like, because you can't come out and say something like this on social media. I think that we need to make a change, and I'm going to vote for it, without giving some context to why you feel that way and how you've stood in the past. So he really, because where the world is, if he goes out on Facebook and says, look, I'm a voting member, and I think that Kevin Sumlin should be replaced, the immediate reaction to that is going to be, you're just another one of these. They're going to make presumptive comments about him. So in writing it, he has to defend where he's been in the past and where he is now with it. To me, it's a balanced statement from somebody that has a vote.
I get it. It's not about him. It's not about him. It's about the board.
But it is when you're a voting member of the board.
I just think it looks. I think it looks so childish. I think it makes you look like an 11-year-old kid who's throwing a temper tantrum because your football team lost the game the way it shouldn't have. You are a board member. You sit on a board, and what happens in that board meeting is private. And there's a lot of other people on that board that are going to make decisions. And it's all great and wonderful that you're powerful and important. And we get it, dude. But it's just not about you. He's making it about him.
How is he making it about him? He's just being transparent with where he falls on the issue. Like,
and
to
maybe
me,
he's not allowed to. Maybe the board's got rules against that.
Which in and of itself, you know, I think is a problem. I mean, if we're going to sit here and speculate for hours and hours and hours on end, as they're doing, I'm sure, A&M fans are speculating ad nauseum to where this whole thing falls and why they've kept him and why they continue to play the same cycle out, much like we're doing with Butch Jones right now. If people that actually had the power to hire and fire would come out in a very transparent way and say, here's what I've been, where I've been before, here's where I am now, I think he should be let go. I would love that.
I feel like it seems to be in bad taste, it's, given his position with the Board of Regents at Texas A&M.
It's incredibly unprofessional.
He would go on to Facebook, a social media site, to air his grievances.
How else can he air his grievances?
Well, also, I felt like it was already in poor taste when Scott Woodward, who's the athletic director down there at Texas A&M, when he said that basically named a win total for Kevin Sumlin to reach on Paul Feinbaum's show. It's like, okay, I understand you guys might be frustrated with Kevin Sumlin, but there's a way
to do
it.
Let the season play out.
But what is the way to do it if you're him?
Well, it's
you deal with it behind
it's how
closed
he's been
doors.
Doing it before, yes. Like he said in his post, like, I haven't said anything until now. I've kept it under wraps. Continue to do that at the end of the season, whatever point you have to, you know, then have the meeting.
Because
the
what happens?
The Board of Regents came out and said that we will handle this, and that he should not have done that.
Exactly. And so what happens is you get a debacle like what happened at LSU with Les Miles 2 years ago. You have this absolute debacle where board members are leaking information to writers who are writing about how LSU's they're about to fire Les Miles. And then you have this huge, massive debacle and this public uproar and this PR monster. It's a disaster what happened at LSU with Les Miles 2 years ago. Not last year, but 2 years ago. It was a complete PR nightmare. It made LSU look completely unorganized, ridiculous, and foolish. And then all of a sudden, they're carrying him off on their shoulders and they decide to keep him. It makes LSU look completely idiotic. And it's very unprofessional. You are the member of a board. Your job is to not be the rabid guy on Twitter. Like, you can't rip the guy.
But
you cannot rip
balance.
Fans for being on Twitter and saying stupid stuff and then be okay with a guy going on Facebook and saying the same stupid stuff.
I have no problem with my favorite team's owner going on Twitter and ripping my team. No problem with that whatsoever. If I'm a Colts fan and Jim Irsay wants to go out on social media and destroy the Colts as he's done before, I have no problem with that because it's his team.
If you are a voting
member of the Board of Regents and you have a say,
but I'm
saying
he's just a booster. Basically,
it's not the same.
It's not the same.
But my point is, if you're the person that has some say in hiring and firing, and you've been sitting behind closed doors and you've been yelling about it and nobody's listening, and you choose to go to Facebook, I have no problem with that. We don't know.
And Jim Irsay has psychological problems. Like, Jim Irsay had addiction problem. Like, Jim Irsay had to go be helped to
get
through
some
of that
stuff. Jim Irsay and Jerry Jones are still guys that go out on their local radio stations and break the news for their
teams. That makes sense. They can make their decisions because they're the one vote. Like, no one
they're the only guy.
This guy is one guy on a part of the board, and he's not even the lead of the board. When he goes out and says these things, they reflect negatively upon Texas A&M University and all the Board of Regents, like the head of the Board of Regents said.
It makes your university look worse. It makes your board look worse. It makes it look like there's massive dysfunction behind closed doors. And what happens is you get a debacle and a disaster like what happened with LSU two years ago, where they were completely embarrassed by how it was handled and what took place with Les Miles. It's just what happens is with a really tightly run ship and a well-run organization, it all happens behind closed doors, and they come to a unified decision, and they make a unified front, and they announce it, and it becomes a move. Hey, we fired this coach. And at that point, if you want to come out and say, listen, I didn't like this, I like that. Once you present the unified front and you make a professional decision, that's what that's what good programs do. And they're like, this is what we're going to do. This is what's going to happen, and here's what the board has voted on.
Yeah, I understand your point. I just disagree with it. I mean, to me, I want to see somebody come out and be transparent. I mean, this whole conversation we had for how long about Butch Jones's future, if somebody that actually had the power to say something about Butch Jones's future would come out and say something specifically, we could then turn around and make a judgment on it. And then we're doing it anyway. I mean, and to lump that person in, which is your average fan that's coming in, and the difference is your average fan's going to come in and yell the first half. And then they're going to come in and say, oh, nope, never mind, everything's good the second half. Your average fan comes in and they're so fickle in the process that they're turning around and they're changing their mind and their heart with every single drive. That person on Twitter drives me crazy. But to turn around and say that somebody that's a voting member on something wants his opinion known, wants to be transparent about how he feels about it, Man, he's a voting member. I have no problem with that. It doesn't come across as petty to me, and it doesn't come across as bad business to me. It comes across as somebody.
And that's fine. I think it's classless. I think it's unprofessional. I think it's. I think if this would be like if we had three or four people running our company, this would be like one of them just coming out publicly and being like, I don't like Fitz. I think that is not the way you conduct business. It is not professional, and it is classless.
And if we had sat behind closed doors and it had been said over and over and over again, and that guy's not being heard, and I finally said something on radio that was so awful that everybody on every network was talking about it, you can't tell me that guy wouldn't do that. The difference is usually he goes as an unnamed source to a reporter, which is total BS. I'd rather see him stand up and say, here's what I think as a voting member, as a person that's a regent, I will put my name behind this and I will say, this is how I feel, because I feel passionately enough that I want the world to feel that. That's far better to me than our typical unnamed source. And that's what we... That's what we talk about for hours.
And I can understand where you're coming from on that. Like, hey, be a man, you know, own it, whatever. Like, I understand that. I get where you're coming from on that. To me, going on a Facebook rant is like what my grandmother does when she doesn't get her lemonade. Like, it's just not the way a professional board of directors of a 200 or whatever the university is for A&M, which would be the endowment is like second highest in the entire SEC. I mean, it's one of the biggest endowments. We're talking about a $1 billion corporation. Board of directors do not go out and say outlandish, crazy things on social media ramblings for most of the biggest companies in the world. It just doesn't.
And I think that's changing. I think that ultimately we live in a world now where when news breaks, the first place we go to look at sports news when it breaks is Twitter. Social media has become the spot where you have to weed through a lot of garbage to get there, but it's where actual opinion and actual news sits. There are actual news stories broken there. It's the best way for him to get his story out right then, right there, and reflect it with his name on it. I have no problem with it. Well, speaking of things with your name on it, Butch Jones is a name that we've all rolled off the tongue all summer long. Problem is, maybe we were all wrong. Maybe Butch is better than you think. We'll tell you why we're saying that. We'll do it next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz, and this is Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. And we're going to get right to some freestyle. Caller number 5-615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. What's that number again? 615-737-1025. Oh, yeah, you got it. You're going to win a $50. I should never do that again. A $50 gift certificate for Barlines. Join 1025 The Game at Barlines this Sunday for NFL Football Sunday starting at 9:30 a.m. before the Titans-Raiders game. Barlines located in the Omni Hotel downtown. Shuttles provided to Nissan Stadium before the game. So what you got to do is you got to come down while we're down there between 9:30 and 11:30 to pick up your $50 at Barlines. So 615-737-1025. I'll be there. So come and heckle me. I want you to pick up the gift card. I want you to look at me, and I want you to scream, freestyle! That's all I'm asking.
I'm not eligible to win the gift card, which is totally fine with me, but I will heckle.
No, that's fantastic. 615-737-1025. I hope you would heckle. And also, don't forget, while we're talking about football.
I'm going to post on Facebook how you should get fired.
It's time to make your picks for our Pro Football Pick'em contest. You have a chance to win awesome prizes, including a trip for two to Hawaii, brought to you by Computer and Communications Innovations in Nashville.
Ooh.
Sign up and pick now at thegamenashville.com. So Butch Jones, here's the thing. Butch Jones might actually be a better coach than we've been giving him credit for, and maybe we missed the boat on the entire thing. Bud Elliott from SB Nation joined us earlier today with a really interesting article about it.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. Up on SB Nation, he tweeted it out yesterday, and the quote that really caught me is, Jones doesn't measure up to standards that require him to produce nationally elite teams, but he is consistently producing good teams. That should be considered success at Tennessee. And that is, I think, where the debate should rage for Tennessee fans and for fans of college football, is what are reasonable expectations for Tennessee? And I think over time, Tennessee has national championship DNA. It's got a history of winning at a high level for a very long extended period of time. They have not had a four-loss season since the late 70s. So they have been a consistently good program for a very, very long time. They have a massive amount of resources, athletic department budget, support, facilities, all the stuff you need to win. They can recruit at a high level. They've won national championships. And their recruiting base is getting better. Now, are they a better program than Florida and Georgia? No. Florida should have higher expectations and should compete for championships on a more regular basis. But for me, I don't think Tennessee fans read that column by Bud Elliott and say, yeah, I'm okay with 8-4. And the bottom line is, this is the University of Tennessee. 8-4 isn't good enough every single year. It's fine a couple of years. It's okay to go, all right, we got a downturn, and you know, we're rebuilding the roster. We're going to go 7-5, 8-4 a couple of times. But then the upside of that needs to be, every now and then you need to go 11-1 or 10-2 or 12-0 and get to Atlanta and play in the SEC title game. And the question about Butch Jones is what Bud Elliott wrote. Doesn't measure up to the standard that requires him to produce nationally elite teams. So should Tennessee, every now and then, be capable of producing a nationally elite team? And the answer is absolutely yes, they should. And that is the question about Butch Jones. Is he good enough to take them to that next level? He's done a great job so far to rebuild the program. Does he have what it takes to take them to the next level? And I don't think we know that answer. Most people, including you, Fitzy, say no.
Well, and part of the difference is what Bud Elliott, we asked him earlier when we had him on, how often should they be competitive? That's the big difference, because his answer was they should be able to swing up and compete for an SEC title every 6 years, 5 or 6 years. That's a much different answer than every 3 years. Every 5 or 6 years is a much different expectation. And obviously, what this really comes down to is they didn't hit the marks that most people had for them last year. And as a result of that, if they'd gone to Atlanta last year, if they had gone to Atlanta last year, we could say, well, at least he got to Atlanta. And then whatever happens this year would be forgiven. Because
losing to Bama and Atlanta is just what happens to everybody.
That's the issue, is that they didn't go to Atlanta right. last year. So we're right. at the point in time in his tenure where it's, well, you should have already reached that threshold of the, I guess, 3, 4, 5 years, however you want to have it, to where you've won the division. And this year, yeah, they beat Georgia Tech. That's good. Georgia Tech seems like they're going to be a pretty good team. But it's not as if Tennessee went out there and won the game because of things that they
did. No, they got outplayed.
They got outplayed. And, yeah, Rashawn Gold made a play to strip J.J. Green. So they made the plays that were necessary to win the game, but Georgia Tech really helped them out. And I'm of the opinion, like Braden, I do think that Tennessee should be a team that can compete and win national championships, because they've done it before. If you look at any school around college football and they've done it before, I still believe they can do it again. Because for some reason it happened, so that wasn't just a fluke. Colorado, I mean, yeah, they weren't good for a long time now. Mike McIntyre is doing a decent job. Can they win it again? Probably not, but it's possible.
It's the conversation.
I know them doing it than another team out there like a South Carolina that's never done it before.
I know they're much different sports, but I'll go back to college basketball as an example. Having grown up around UNLV from that period in the early 80s where they were dominant, there was a period in the early 90s that they were incredible. And I look at that and say, okay, there was a period in that time where they were as good as it gets, and you can look at that and say, well, you can build a winning basketball program at UNLV. No, you can't. And I realize they're different schools, but I think that things are different sports, but things change over history of time.
It's sick.
I think you can win
UNLV
at UNLV.
Falling off, and
I don't think you can win at UNLV basketball.
Can't. Well, Bishop Gorman is one of the top high school
You could absolutely
programs.
Win at UNLV.
And if they had a guy who could recruit there, they could win there.
Yeah, no,
I think it's possible. It's not. They're never going to be as.
They can't win at UNLV because they can't get themselves into a conference that has enough relevance for them to win.
But that's the difference between basketball and football. You don't need that.
Well, right. Gonzaga has played a national championship game.
I acquiesce that they're very different sports.
It only takes one guy to be great.
UNLV basketball gets poached by the Pac-12 and by UCLA all the time. That's why they tried desperately to make a move to get into the Pac-12 so they could be more competitive.
Going back to Tennessee, the fact is they've won, 5, 6 national championships?
Yeah.
They've done it with 3 different coaches. So this is not like they just did it one time and it was a fluke. They've done it over different decades, of course, the 50s and 60s of General Nealon, completely different than what we have now in the modern era, which you could argue that Tennessee in the modern era, which you can say the playoff era now, hasn't been any good and hasn't really been that competitive.
Right. And there are lots of teams that in those 60s that used to be good that won national titles that have fallen to the wayside in college football. Army, you know, Army was a team that won national titles all the time. Michigan State won a national titles. Minnesota won national titles. That was back when only the Big Ten was integrated. So, like, that almost doesn't apply. But in the modern era of college football, which is basically 77 when the scholarship limitations kicked in, you sort of have a 40 or 50-year window where it's the same 20 teams every single year competing for national titles. Oregon and Virginia Tech are the only two, like, obscure teams that have kind of – not obscure, but, like, second-tier teams that have sort of vaulted themselves into that conversation, and that took Marcus Mariota and Michael Vick to get there. And even then, they got pretty much handled easily in the national title game. So nobody wins national championships.
Darren Thomas as well.
Darren Thomas was good, and they played well in that game against Auburn. But the bottom – and Oregon is one of the few exceptions to the rule that has changed its hierarchy stance in the college football world. Nebraska is going the other direction. They're one of the only teams that's going the other direction. So – it's just you can't change your lot in life in college football. You're either a big-time power program with big money and access to players, or you're not. And Tennessee is absolutely a big-money program with access to players.
That's the funny thing about Texas A&M and the whole Kevin Sumlin debate. Like, just because you went to the SEC and you moved away from Texas in the Big 12 doesn't mean that you're not still Texas A&M. Like, you've never done it before, so what makes you think that all of a sudden you're going to go and play LSU and Alabama and Auburn every year and be able to do it?
They changed their money, though. They financially have changed their program. They've been a different program since then.
Mattered for 1 year.
I do think that there are expectations for the Vols. I just think, for me, when I look at the Vols on the outside looking in, I look at what Bud Elliott said when I asked him, hey, and his answer was a little different than where I was going with the question. But if you're a coach and you could pick any job in the East to go to, generally, which one, where would they rank? And generally, I think we all agree that Tennessee would be the third best job in the East.
Yep.
So to me, generally, Tennessee is a third place team in the East that every once in a while is supposed to have a come up. They're supposed to every once in a while have that year where you're like, holy cow, and they win the East.
Every 5 years, which is what history has shown.
You know, I think every 5 or 6 years getting to Atlanta is a viable goal. I don't look at them and say I can't look at them and say that I look at it and say that's a national championship aspiration. I think that winning the SEC East, not the SEC, is a viable goal for them every 5 or 6 years. And if that's the viable goal every 5 or 6 years, being in third place in the East in the middle of that time, it's not the end of the world.
And I don't have a problem with that either. Over time, if you're third, 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 first, second, third, like that's your 5-year run, then that should be okay. But when you finish first and you get to Atlanta and you win the SEC title, let's remove Nick Saban from this because he just kind of kills everybody's dreams. But if you put him if you win it every third or fourth year and you win the SEC championship every third or fourth year, you're playing in the playoff and you're competing for national titles.
I think that the line between the SEC West and the East,
that's cyclical, like we talked about. And I also will point out the fact that I think what led to Mark Richt kind of getting ousted at Georgia is you're seeing teams like Missouri who aren't, you know, the upper echelon of the SEC East historically. Of course, they have only been in the league for, 5 years now. But Missouri, in the last decade, has come closer to playing for a national championship.
Yep.
Twice. Two times.
Yeah. Well, in 2007.
Tennessee.
No, 2007, too.
Yeah, that's what I said. That's what I'm saying. Last decade. Two times. 2007 and, 2013, when they lost to Auburn in the SEC championship game. Yeah. They've come close twice. Well, Tennessee hasn't even been to Atlanta since
2007. So
when we come back, I want to ask everybody a real introspective question about Butch. I'll get y'all's thoughts on it, and it's something you guys are going to want to think about regarding Butch. We'll do that next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gull. I'm Jason Fitz. This is Braden and Fitz live from the Game National Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. in Mount Juliet. Don't forget to make your silly underdog picks, brought to you by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Pick three college underdog teams you think will win before the weekend college football games begin. To sign up, make your picks, visit thegamenashville.com. Do it now. Here's the real question you guys need to ask yourself. Not you guys, but everybody listening. It's just us girls talking. All right? Nobody's going to judge you here. Is there really anything that can happen at this point that will change your mind on Butch? Because I think the answer to that is no.
No.
I think everybody
I
think at this point people have dug their heels in on Butch Jones.
I think it would take something pretty not quite miraculous, but close. So I'm not going to say, you know, never, but if he were to go 10-2 this year and win the East, I think people would change.
That's the only way. I mean, he's not going to win the East this year.
Right.
So I'm going to say no, because if he was going to do it, he would have done it last year.
But you want to tell
you
me.
You never know about college football, though.
Let me ask the follow-up question to that. Even if he goes 10-2 and wins the East this year, if he starts 0-2 next year, are people not right back on the, man, last year was a fluke? Like, people have made up their minds on Butch Jones. And while he could go to Atlanta, get his butt kicked by Bama, and it will buy a little bit of a, let's see if he can do it 2 years in a row. That's actually going to be a topic. Can he do it 2 years in a row? Because I think people have dug their heels in. Either they're pro-Butch saying we're all idiots, or they're anti-Butch saying we're all idiots. But either way, I feel like this is when you're watching mommy and daddy fight and you know that there's no resolution to
it. What's really funny is they have so many talented sophomores and juniors that if they were to overachieve this year, they would be picked to win the East again next year.
Hype train, baby. And let's do it again.
And like, I love Michigan and Miami next year. I'm already looking ahead to like next year, which is really, really extra super nerdy. But if you start looking around, like Georgia is going to lose a lot of starters on defense next year, but they could bring back a really good offense. So you start looking around and you go, you know, if they were to go 10-2 this year, the hype train for Butch Jones and Tennessee the following year would be insanely high. But I don't know what else Tennessee – at that point, though, you'd have to step back and go, all right, Tennessee fans, what have you made your mind up on? He went 9 wins, 9 wins, 10 wins. In this crazy scenario, again, we're talking about
– right, crazy scenario.
We're talking, what's the crazy scenario where people will change their mind on Butch Jones and he would sort of unify the fan base, right? 10-2 and a trip to Atlanta, in my opinion, is the only way that happens. Even 9-3 in second place, you're still split down the middle on what the heck Butch Jones really is from an upside standpoint, even though that would be considered overachieving pretty obviously and pretty clearly. But if he were to go 9 wins, 9 wins, 10 wins, I would then ask Tennessee fans, against a Nick Saban-led SEC conference, what would you want? What do you expect out of your coach? Because this is the same thing that Mark Richt and Les Miles and Steve Spurrier and all these other coaches have done that were great and Hall of Famers and couldn't beat Nick Saban. So at that point, I would say to fans, what else do you need from him? He's rebuilt the program. He's recruited a high level, and now he's been to Atlanta. I don't know what else you can ask of a football coach at the University of Tennessee. Now, the odds of that happening, to Julian's point, are slim and none. I don't think anyone thinks it would be a big upset if Tennessee got to Atlanta this year. And certainly after the showing from the defensive front on Monday night, nothing about that defensive front tells me that they're going to stop good running games in the SEC. And there's a lot of good offenses right now in the SEC.
I mean, I'd like for them to go to Atlanta. Be a lot more fun to talk about Tennessee kind of resurrecting its program and getting a 10-win season without a bowl win. Because I think that's what Tennessee fans want. It's all good and well to, you know, beat Nebraska with their backup quarterback.
Oh, they're the Big Ten West champs.
And to go 8-4 and 9-4 every year.
Right.
Come on.
They beat Nebraska, Northwestern, Iowa. Like, they own the Big Ten West, like the way Georgia Tech is the SEC East champ.
Yeah, well, now 3-1 Georgia Tech.
That's true.
Don't miss the 6th annual Wine Around the Square Fest to benefit St. Thomas Rutherford Foundation's Power Pink, by the way, guys. Rutherford County's premier program in the fight against breast cancer. Wine, craft beers, premium spirits served for tasting around the historic downtown square. Murfreesboro, Saturday, September 16th from 6 to 9 p.m. Also live entertainment, a buffet, supper, food trucks. For more info to purchase tickets, visit winearoundthesquare.org.
Also bring all your food, clothing items, money, donations to the McGugan Center today. That's the Vanderbilt Athletic Complex down there on West End. They'll be taking donations for Hurricane Harvey relief support for the people of Texas all day until 7 p.m. So many great organizations doing a lot of work right now to try to help the people. Again, 40,000 people estimated kicked out of their houses and homes in the greater Houston area, most of which do not have flood insurance, most of which still have to pay mortgages, which is a really, really awful combination. So
many of us here know that exact combination. We've all lived through that. So
bring your stuff, take stuff. Money is still the most important thing. Money will always be the most important thing in these situations. But if you've got, you know, items, cleaning supplies, blankets, things for kids, diapers, that kind of stuff, take it all to the McGugan Center today. They're going to ship it all down there. They've partnered up with Rice University, University of Houston, and some other local universities down there to try to help. So bring your stuff to the McGugan Center at Vanderbilt. They're gonna deliver it for you. Make sure.
Yeah, and think about that moment that we all lived through, many of us with a lot of damage in the flood, when you sort of realize that not only were you not able to buy flood insurance because of where you lived, but now you've been flooded out. And as a result, FEMA can't really help you get back your value and you're upside down.
Not what they're supposed to do. That's not what FEMA's supposed to do.
But that's where so many of us in this city were not too long ago, where you're sitting there saying, now how do I rebuild? How do I get this back to square one? And how do I not do permanent financial damage to my life? So Houston's going through that now. And frankly, it looks like Florida's going to be going through that in any day. So this is an opportunity, even $5-$10, as we've talked about a lot, will help. Speaking of things we've talked a lot about, but we can't get off today without saying this. Today's the one-year anniversary, the one-year birthday of Braden and Fitz. It was a year ago today we walked into the studio and said, what in the heck are we doing?
You had me at, it is.
It Braden is. Yeah, that's right. D-Mace chiming in with the happy birthday.
It's happy ever-nursery.
Yeah, we said this earlier, but we mean it sincerely. We don't have a show if you guys don't listen, and everything that we've ever done, everything that we do in our lives is based on fan support. And so it's been the coolest year of my life. It's been a great we've been able to forge like a great relationship with you guys, and it's been amazing. So Julian Council has been a part of it, but
he has been involved
here, right? But that we've had a lot of interns come across. We mentioned happy birthday to intern Casey earlier, but and intern Preston, and I mean yeah. bearded intern Melody. We've just had a whole
intern
of people.
The intern of science, right? Shaggy Chicago intern, currently Chicago intern. And by the way, you've been involved in some unbelievable, amazing things in your music career and in your sports career. I've been involved in a lot of things in my career, but to have been a part of this city. And I know we're getting cheesy and sentimental here, but to be a part of this city and with you guys out there during what took place with the Nashville Predators run to the Stanley Cup, I cannot imagine when we started this show we would ever be involved in something like that.
Yeah.
And to that have happened in our first year is absolutely one of the coolest things that could have ever happened to us and our show and you and me personally. So it just makes it that much more exciting to get training camp started, which, oh, by the way, is starting in like a couple of weeks. So, I mean, your Nashville Predators are back on the ice very soon, and I do think the city is way more excited about the game one of the regular season than we've ever been before for obvious reasons. And obviously, this is your home for Nashville Predators hockey. So
yeah, and I'll never forget the first time somebody came up to me at a Preds game and said, "Hey, man, listen to the show, love it." Like, that's a meaningful, honest memory. Hey, and we do have to thank Cromwell, obviously, Bud and Jana and Ryan Porth, all the people here that have scratched their head a few times and said, "I don't know why we gave those two yo-yos a microphone." But it's taken
Brent
a lot
Peterson's
of people.
Brent Peterson's still scratching his head, asking why the heck we're on the air.
Brent still flips through the channel and says, not today on this show. Julian Council, by the way, been a huge part of the growth and development of it, and it's been really cool to see all the people that have been involved in this team. So we can't be here and not say thank you, because we wouldn't be here without a lot of people that have allowed us this opportunity. So here's to one year down, 57 more to go, and you think we're crotchety old men now. Just wait until we actually
wait
till
become get the 7-year itch.
Crotchety old men. I don't know what 3D's doing. They're coming up next. It'll be better than what we just did. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz, Julian Council, Melody. It's the whole team here. You've been listening to Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Thanks for listening. Do it again. Get tomorrow, guys.